Hello, iGaming Intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsors. The iGaming Next podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. I've been working with Ashley, Lewis, and the guys over at Pragmatic Solutions over the last year. And as the early supporter of this podcast, I cannot recommend them enough. The Pragmatic Solutions Player Account Management Platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo.
Future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lindt.
So yeah, Andreas, it's nice to have you on the podcast today, and nice to see you in person, first of all.
Hey, thanks, Pierre. Pleased to be here.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. I mean, you know, I've known you obviously for a long time here in Malta. We've been in the industry together here for a long time, and it's exciting to see that you are taking on this new project. So first of all, can you talk a little bit about on-air entertainment and what makes you different to the competition, and what are you set out to do here, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me, Pierre. Hi, listeners. Very much on air entertainment's here to provide an alternative to, let's say, a monopolized product sector. We describe our core values as disruptive, passionate, and unity. And so through those words, I think we could describe what we want to achieve. Very much looking to focus on what the industry needs, is looking for. And if we say core products, if we say innovation, we want to just make sure that we compete on not only product, but services, customer services, and disrupt what is currently a monopolized space.
Yeah, it's not a small challenge, that is for sure. But obviously, Andreas, I mean, for those of you who don't know you, obviously, I mean, you have built live casino departments in the past. Like, can you talk a bit about like your background as well?
Yeah, sure. I spent actually started 20 years ago, and it's funnily enough this month. I was 19 and I did a training school for a land-based casino in Bournemouth, Gala Casino. And then I moved to the Ritz Club in London, where I spent the next 3 years. So I was actually a croupier when I was young.
Right.
That's where the journey started. An old manager who became a friend, James Kerwin, he about 10 years later, I left, I went in to do other things. 10 years later, he'd moved online for William Hill. So this was about eight, nine years ago now, 2012. And he reached out, and actually a couple of old employees, team members that had worked with him in a couple of land-based casinos had the opportunity to move to Latvia and work for William Hill within Evolution Gaming. Evolution Gaming 2012, you know.
Yeah.
Up and coming, only 6 years old at that point. And then 2 years at William Hill within the Evo space, Evo offered me an opportunity to work for them. Then spent the next 4.5 years in Malta, running operations. Then a couple of years moved to NetEnt Live to turn around, let's say, a product that needed more focus and attention to what the market needed and wanted. And so I did that for 18 months, and then Evolution actually bought NetEnt and decided to close down the product vertical.
Yeah.
So obviously they had a product or one or two platforms in the live space. So I spent the last 8 to 9 years of my life in the live dealer space. operations or running the business unit. And then this opportunity came along with On Air Entertainment, simply because operators want choice and the lack of supplier choice. Yeah. And myself and my team, like the leadership team, have like 100 years of live casino experience between us all now. So On Air Entertainment was already born when I met Microgaming. And at that point, it became something more. And so we then discussed vision, discussed opportunity, and then it was really born into its what it is now. It's becoming a new live dealer offering to the market.
Yeah, so, really interesting.
So quite a lot of experience has gone into it. But that table game knowledge from my career 20 years ago is what sort of added value to me coming into the live dealer space.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing experience in the team. I'd be really curious to know more. You mentioned, you know, you discussed the vision, what is On Air Entertainment going to strive to be, and so on. Like, can you talk a bit more about that as well? Like, what is the vision in the company, would you say? I know that you mentioned the three core values and so on, but can you go into detail more?
Yeah, so we want to build on this 100 years of experience that we have. We believe that the live dealer space will only grow. So just on core products alone, that market will grow. So being part of that growth is part of the vision. We obviously, within the vision, we want to disrupt the space. Yeah. We want to become a product alternative of choice for the operators and for the players. As we've seen in the RNG market, you have hundreds of suppliers now. No clear leader, however, some have done significantly well within their space, but that hasn't been sort of plundered as much in the live dealer space because of how difficult it is to enter the market. Yeah. So our vision is to become that supplier of choice. Yeah. And what we noticed through our experience is to offer customization. So operators want to be involved with the product. It's one of those touch and feel type products. And so if we can tailor those live casino experiences to operator and player need, we'll be meeting what is currently our vision.
Yeah, right. Really interesting. And as you mentioned, that obviously you've been in this space for a long time. I mean, you must be one of the most experienced professionals in this space, obviously building studios in several different organizations and been a part of those journeys. Like, how has the space developed over the last decade, technology-wise and competence-wise and so on?
Yeah, I'm flattered for you to say one of the most experienced. I wouldn't put myself there. I definitely believe I have a good understanding of what it takes to build a live dealer. That's right. Why I'm here.
Okay, very, very humble man.
Yeah, well, thank you. but the last decade, incredible journey with the technology, not only in the live dealer space, but let's say in social media, like streaming has become everything, right? Yes. You remember when we used to text message on our phone, and it before data, it was text message. Then we moved into data. Then it became, like WhatsApp. Then it was video calling. Yeah. And the video calling is a live streaming in itself.
Right.
And then it was, Twitch. Twitch is now because of live streaming, and that live streaming technology is what I believe has helped lead the product vertical forward, that capability. But at the same time, I did a bit of time in investment banking, so working with trading systems. Okay. And I define a live dealer platform like a real-time trading system, because you have to keep up. There's no time for like settlement to not keep up with the video stream. In RNG, you have a bit more time because you know, the slots can just spin and idle while something transacts in the background, and the end user doesn't know what's going on. That's just more of an experience issue.
Yeah.
But if the transactions aren't going through and the video keeps going, and so you have problems, solving those problems, I think, have been key to the Live Dealer product becoming an exceptional experience for the end user, and then that credibility. So the technology itself, we needed the world to adopt live streaming and that technology route to be like low latency, like cutting edge.
That's the thing,
And achieving that has helped. And I believe the live dealers, suppliers within our industry are at the forefront of, you know, low latency streaming.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's the low latency that is the key here. It's not necessarily the bandwidth and so on. Although, of course, it's important to be able to, I guess, offer as high resolution streaming as well. That would be the bandwidth. But the low latency is really the key here. So like, for example, when new technologies are introduced, like 5G is rolled out now, which offers extremely low latency and so on. Like, these technology developments, and even you could say Apple released a new iPhone yesterday, which is more powerful and so on. And these technologies are helping your space develop as well.
Exactly, exactly. And I think probably some research and development is also being done in our space, which also supports the market. You know, our streaming suppliers are cutting edge. And, you know, Amazon Prime purchased the competitor of a streaming solution provider that we used to use. And so you think Amazon Prime, the moment anyone says that they bought a competitor in that space, they're serious business, right? So I think that's key. And then other developments are innovation, you know, bringing even the underground, sort of the last decade, the underground vibe of casinos, like land-based casinos, it became entertainment. And in that way, made it socially acceptable. Online adoption of it being socially acceptable because no one knows what you're doing, I think also spurs on the growth. And the entertainment value within the live dealer space makes that socially acceptable adoption to gambling and fun and entertainment much quicker on a live game.
Yeah.
So I think those changes in perception of gambling within the live space also accelerated live dealer. Then, you know, taking just core products, what works. So you've got roulette and standard blackjack are still the highest revenue generating games, albeit, you know, standard blackjack has a lower profit margin per table because it's not scalable.
Yeah, right.
But you still have more tables of blackjack generating revenue by the nature of fixed fees and rev share.
Yeah.
So I think that's that development of just making the core games exceptional with that streaming, with that low latency trading engine, with the technology. And then those suppliers have then taken it forward into, you know, they talk about game shows. Everyone's got a wheel. So can we say a wheel is core now? You know, core used to be blackjack and roulette, but who hasn't got a wheel game with a clicker? So ultimately, we should say those wheel games are core now because everybody has one. Obviously, there were front runners and first to market with making them. We know who they are.
Yeah.
But is it fair to say that you could have a live dealer supplier and not have one? That would be like having a, you know, building a slot game and not having a spin button on it. Every supplier will have these games. Not saying we shouldn't innovate on those games or beyond those games, but I think the description of core games now has a wider sort of portfolio around it. And because of the volume of games now available in the live dealer space.
Yeah. And I'm guessing as well that the experimentation that's happened within the game show genre in the last couple of years have just proved that it is a genre for the future as well, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think so.
What's your thoughts in general on these games? Like, again, you mentioned that it's potentially something you want to look into. Like, are you planning to eventually attack the game show segment, let's say?
Yeah, I think the short answer is very much so. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm keen to do a game show game. Hmm. I think that's the one area where people can take on the concept of game show, but completely innovate from what's out there. There's no, for on-air entertainment, we're going to be doing the core, you know, what works. And that still has plenty of growth potential.
Yeah.
So core is a focus. If you talk about game shows, that will be a focus. I would say medium term, you know, near short term is going to be more focused on core.
Yeah, exactly. You set the foundation, make sure.
Get it working, make sure we deliver on what we say we can do, and then make sure it's exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And then at that point, we'll move on and look at building our own game show. And I think, you know, when I say medium term, I'm saying we'll have to start thinking about what a game show for us looks like by the end of this year.
Yeah.
Because it'll take a year to build it and a year of working everything out. So for that to be available 18 to 24 months from now, we need to start acting. But we'll definitely be looking in that space. I think also with the partnership with Microgaming, there's plenty of other opportunities to innovate and collaborate with all the different game studios that they work with. There'll be plenty of creative people who'll be coming up for ideas of games that could be executed within the live space that no one's thought of yet.
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting opportunity that will be explored. But again, once we get running.
Yeah.
And then I think there's the stuff that hasn't been done yet. That for me, obviously running on air entertainment, that excites me. But that's going to come from a team of product people. We have some great product delivery people. We have some great creative people within the organization. And our vision is, and partnering obviously with Microgaming. So our vision is to actually bring a lot of heads together and come up with something new.
Yeah.
In what time frame? I wouldn't commit to at this stage. We want to get live first and then take it from there.
Because you mentioned here before we started that your team is already over 100 people. And I mean, you haven't even launched the product yet, right?
Like,
So at the moment, I mean, how is the growth looking for on our entertainment? Like operationally, what are you...
Yeah, I think, I mean, as I said, we're over 100 employees now and we haven't started truly hiring operations, which is the volume of staff. I think that is a statement of our ambitions.
Yeah.
That's heavy focus on technology, a heavy focus on game development, and a heavy focus on market entries. So we've spent some time putting together our roadmap for the next 18 months. We're going to work very hard to deliver it, and those first 100 employees are key and core to delivering it. But when we start to look at operations, obviously we then go into the 200, 300, 400 very quickly. So we're looking and have the ability to scale fast. On-air Entertainment has tons of experience in scaling fast, has tons of experience in each of the areas or facets of running a live dealer business. So, you know, confident that the right recruitment and hiring and volume and being able to manage a business that's scaling fast will be successful. Doing it and managing it and adapting to that is always a challenge, but one I think we're equipped to deal with.
Yeah, because I mean, that is essentially to a large extent what is hindering this space from having 100 competitors, as in the RNG space, you know, the big time gamings with 11 staff, a football team, you know, going to the size they did and so on. Whereas in the live space, it's all about scaling the business. That must be the biggest challenge here, right?
I'd say so. I'd say for any new entrant to the live dealer space, not only have they got to get that latency, you know, streaming and platform technology correct for, you know, it's like a high volume transaction system. They then have to manage operations, which a lot of people from our industry are not used to, right, in terms of like a, running a car manufacturer, like running a factory. So people getting used to that, or that land-based experience, they're very much so. You go to Las Vegas, they could have hundreds of gaming tables, and you need rosters for thousands of staff. That experience is learned or gained from actually doing it. And I think that is one of the biggest challenges, and doing it at a high standard, because given there's a monopoly or a, you know, clear market leaders in the space, I think the standard that they've achieved means any market entrant not only has to do all that,
yeah,
with less experience, they have to, right, do it at a very high standard to be considered an option for,
yeah,
operators and players.
Yeah, yeah, of course, it's, yeah, it's going to be like that. And I mean, on that note, I mean, how you mentioned it yourself, I mean, there is not exactly a monopoly, but it's obviously very strong competition in the space, with Evolution obviously being market leader for a long time. Like, how do you enter the space? Like, how do you compete against this?
We're keen to come in and be the friendly supplier.
Yeah.
Come in and, you know, work with our customers for their needs. That tailored solutions, identify the areas that they want to explore with us, and then meet those needs. So I think innovative commercially, innovative from an employment perspective.
Right.
Again, like we say, the core products, they work, so we have to do those. And then innovative on the product,
yeah,
further down the line.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we'll take our experience. I made a lot of mistakes on this journey, and yeah, so I'm going to take all of those mistakes, and my team would all admit the same. And from all of those mistakes, we believe On Air Entertainment will learn from those mistakes,
yeah,
and do things differently now, or do things faster because we know all the mistakes we've made, like just learning from experience.
Yeah.
So I think that's a way we'll attack the market.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of market out there, and it's growing significantly, that there's plenty of pie for everybody. So no concerns on getting players to the tables.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, in the live space, there is obviously retention of the staff and so on must be absolute key as well in such a staff heavy operation. And what's your thoughts around like retaining your employees and building just a healthy organization from scratch? Like,
it's a very, very good question. For me, personally,
yeah,
I've known the let's say at one point I had 1400 employees within my organization across 6 geographical locations. That was a massive achievement for me. But I feel a learning from that was how much more focus you need on employees. What we learned from COVID, like employee well-being, mental health, all those types, yeah, of things, it actually is part of I'm going to say our strategy on our entertainment, to consider employees first and foremost alongside with the business. So not we'll get the business going and then we'll take care of the employees. It's we'll get the business going at the same time as taking care of the employees along the way. So sort of making it all about the journey and, yeah, not the end goal.
Yeah.
Something I'm living by in my life as well at the moment, like enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, putting things in place so we can not react to employee turnover, but we can anticipate it and stem it by making it a good place to work. Mm-hmm. And it's a focus of ours. We've got a great HR team. Again, people I've worked with in the past, so very confident that we will adopt a very clearly defined culture within our organization, and that will be led by the leadership team through the organization.
Mm-hmm. And Anders, like, what's like you personally about leadership in general, like what's your like ethos and thoughts around leadership? Because like you mentioned, you've led this massive organization and now you're building obviously this organization. You're the front and center of this, of course. And what's your leadership style yourself?
That's a very interesting question as well. I've been through a change here.
Yeah.
I would say early doors, under pressure, very directive.
Yeah.
Then went through a change, elevated myself into sort of director position at NetEnt. That was more inclusive, but still holding on.
Mm.
At this stage now, I'd say it's very leadership and less management, asking questions as opposed to telling people what to do, trusting my team, trusting that they know what to do, and coaching them into making the best decision for the business. And I think that's something we're distilling within all of the leadership team, and everyone's approach is make the best decision for on-air entertainment, and that will be the right one.
Mm.
And but now I'm using all of my learnings, all of those one-to-ones, all of those hours of spending time with people and experience into defining a less directive approach with anyone in on-air entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I do this podcast, Anders, is because I have an excuse to speak to people like you. And obviously I'm building our own little bubble here and so on. And I'm just really curious to know kind of in your journey, you know, as a leader, for example, kind of what you've learned throughout the way. Because I think the general consensus amongst senior leaders is what you're saying, the fact that being able to take a step away and kind of trust the organization and so on. Because it's very easy as a leader and as an entrepreneur to be micromanaging, and you know, you have this very, very clear vision and you want people to really work towards it and so on. But at the same time, it kind of kills their creativity. And it's a dichotomy in a way, you know, where it's like you have a vision, but at the same time, you need to trust this staff to
100%. Yeah. I've been fortunate. I would say I've had 4 or 5 managers or leaders in my career, all with very different skill sets or, you know, strengths within their skill sets, all very good holistically. But I would say each one of them having a very different clear strength, a strength that I believe I've taken on or learned from, at least.
Right.
I wouldn't say I'm clearly good at or as strong as them in their clear strength, but I've managed to take on each of their strengths and then be able to apply it now.
Mm.
And that, I think, is helping. With my leadership team, if I can, you know, find the best way to lead somebody and take all of those different strengths and pass that on.
Mm.
I'm very, again, very confident in our leadership team passing that down to the next layer. And then that will help build almost a culture throughout the organization where you don't micromanage and you do allow creativity. However, knowing where the line is to sort of rein it in and say, okay, we do still need to achieve something here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And what about now? I mean, you're building this organization right in the middle of a pandemic, right in the middle of COVID. And it's a large, it's a staff heavy operation. And how are you dealing with the fact that we're in a pandemic? Obviously, you are based here in Malta and the studio is based in Riga and you have offices all over Europe and so on. Like, how do you deal with the growth, like considering the pandemic and the remote work situation? And what's your thoughts on this?
So definitely challenging. Funnily enough, I was obviously in my last journey at NetEnt when the pandemic hit.
Right.
So we actually had learnings from running or trying to grow a business during the pandemic, an operations business during the pandemic. That was when the whole world was adapting to obviously what the pandemic's like. So we came into this journey with some level of experience. I'm definitely more of a sociable manager. So face-to-face for me is great. Massive adoption of, like, you know, Teams and Zoom calls. but you can't, I find it harder to connect with people. I'd say my a forte of mine is sitting by someone, understanding what they need, what they want, what I need, and finding a way for everyone to be happy. But doing that on video conferencing calls is much more challenging for me. So I actually have people in my organization until last week that have worked for me in both journeys, spanning 1 to 2 years, and I hadn't even met them face to face. So that was the biggest challenge for me. I've always had a great team who are, you know, problem solvers, or so they've always been able to solve these challenges as they've come up. And again, there's no one to judge. We're managing a pandemic. So and dealing with people, and the needs of the people came ahead, I think, across the world, ahead of the needs of business. Businesses had to react to it, and we were just another one of those. However, going from scratch, like with this journey with On Air Entertainment, like literally employee number one, I would say more challenging, because previously the infrastructure was in place. When the pandemic hit, you had employees, you had a lot going on. I would say it hasn't affected speed. If I was employee number one at the end of last year, and we're aiming to go live end of this year, I believe that that's a feat that when it happens, I'll be very happy to say, look what we did in a year during a pandemic. Same. But that's thanks to the hard work of everybody in On Air Entertainment.
So
we're onboarding key experienced individuals who are more than capable for maneuvering us through all the hurdles that the pandemic will show us.
Yeah, very cool, Andres, in general. I mean, it is definitely a feat to be able to start an organization from zero like this. It's such a complex operation, and then within a year go to launch. I'll be keen as well to switch topic a bit and talk about markets in general, what your thoughts are on that. I mean, what's your ideas now in terms of which markets will you attack from day one, and which key markets do you see for the company as you move into year 2, 3, 4 and so on?
Yeah, I think starting a live dealer now, or starting any business now in the iGaming space, we're looking at an almost fully regulated industry within Europe, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, almost all the key countries that anyone would focus on are regulated in one way or another. So I like to look at it slightly more holistically and say we're going after all key regulated markets. Current focus will be within Europe. So, you know, working with MGA, UKGC, go look at Italy, Spain, etc. The live dealer space has that additional permutation that some markets like Spain, Belgium, Romania, you also have to build your studio in the country. Right. So again, taking that into consideration, they'll be our first focus, you know, test the product out in a proven market, and then, you know, gain some learning, some more learning, some more confidence, and then we'll look much further afield. But the focus will be, immediately with, you know, MGA license, KGC.
Right. And looking, you know, everyone in the industry obviously talking about the big prize, which is, you know, over the pond in North America, and expectations of the markets absolutely massive. Some even think that the North American market will be up to 20 times bigger than the European market down the line. And so I'm guessing that obviously the North America has come up in your guys' meetings internally. Like, I don't know how much you're able to kind of talk about this and whatnot, but what's your thoughts on North America? Is this a market that you're looking to attack, or...
I think any new iGaming business has to consider North America. It would be unwise not to. For us, it's definitely on the cards for the future. You know, it is one of those topics that come up, but not as a focus point right now. In terms of what we're working on, if you try to spread yourself too thin, you end up achieving either very little or a lower quality but spread thin.
Yeah.
So our goal is to, and again, spreading yourself across all of Europe and all the different regulations and permutations of delivering your games, I think that's a very large ambition in itself that we're taking on. America or North America on top of that is, it's just a step for us. So we do step one. As we're progressing right. through step one, we'll be able to take that decision. But it's right. certainly within the realm of conversations and thinking about it.
Yeah.
Given we're a startup, though, I think there's also a bit of proof in the pudding. Mm. Let's walk before we can run. Let's get things going.
Yeah, let's crawl before you have Kabbalah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. keep our feet on the ground for yeah. a little bit longer.
Yeah, fair enough. And just generally, I mean, the iGaming space is just very interesting. I mean, overall right now, after the Swedish regulation came into effect, obviously the UK regulation becoming stricter, Germany and so on, the operators realized that diversification is the key, right? So all of a sudden you see operators that were traditionally focused on just a couple of demographics becoming geographically diversified. So there's so many emerging markets within the gaming industry right now, obviously US being one of them. But if I can ask you, in your assessment, like what emerging markets do you see as perhaps the most interesting? And is there any emerging market that you find, let's say, overhyped or that won't live up to the hype?
Yeah, I'm interested in whether the overhype one would be Latin America.
Right.
I'm half Colombian myself.
Oh, right.
I've been to Colombia many, many times.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it'll be interesting whether the Latin American countries as emerging markets really deliver on the hype.
Okay.
I know people are doing numbers down there already, but it's given the population size, I'd expect more. But then given the economic value, that's the thing. So how much to invest down there? But again, it's a numbers game for online. We don't have to have people down there. We just need to deliver the games. For me, one interesting emerging market, and I think again, high population, economically different, would be India. I know a lot of people talking about India or looking at India.
Yeah.
And what's interesting for me is having a conversation with someone around that market the other day, an Indian gentleman, and the same comments were made on current product focus within India as were made around Asian product focus, let's say Japan and China, from maybe five to eight years ago. And that was the products we offer from Europe at the time to Asia were very much what Europeans think are Asian products.
Right.
And actually, last week or 2 weeks ago, this gentleman I was speaking to, he said he feels the same. The products that are coming into India from Europe are what Europeans think Indians will like, or Indian demographic players. Mm. And he said they're quite way off. So that for me is interesting on a product level.
Yeah. And I hear that as well, that many operators, for example, try to enter Japan for that reason, and they try and they fail because they don't understand, obviously, the local dynamics and so on. We as an industry are young, obviously, only been existing for 20 years, and primarily the European operators have been European facing, right? So to change, to have this mind shift of actually understanding the local culture and dynamics and what makes them tick is completely different from what we are used to in all emerging markets, I would assume.
100%. I can even relate to that. When I was young, I went to university to computer science, and a lot of my classmates were Chinese, but British-born Chinese. They called themselves BBCs, and if we went into central London, go to Soho with them, it would be, you'd go to the same Chinese restaurant, but you'd get the Chinese menu. and then they'd say, like, would he like the English Chinese menu?
Right.
It's the exact same thing, right? So on a product level, I think that's been done. Not to say European products for Asia haven't been successful, but the Asian made, whichever country it is, they're I would say they're different.
Amazing. Well, Anders, I mean, now looking forward, obviously, you know, you haven't made that much noise externally yet on our entertainment. What are the next steps here now externally? Like, I know that we are both going to Barcelona next week, for example, but I don't think you're going to exhibit there, for example.
Yeah, no plans to exhibit. I'm more looking to just meet some partners and get those conversations going.
Yeah.
Put the vibe out there. This podcast very much part of the communications plan and letting people know that we're coming. You're right, we're not making a big noise. I think that's us again focusing on getting going and knowing that we're on time and knowing that COVID challenges won't hinder us. We're keeping let's say LinkedIn social media updated with progress that we're making. That's part of our communication strategy. However, more noise will be made in the coming, I would say, 4 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And this for me is a big sort of coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and on air entertainment and myself connecting publicly. So this is a first step for me.
Yeah.
I'm putting on air out there, and then Barcelona will be next week.
Yeah, we're not as high tech as you are, obviously, with the studio side and so on, but we do our best here. So, Anders, it's really, really interesting to hear. I mean, this space absolutely needs new challengers and some exciting things happening. So I will definitely follow this project close, and, you know, let's follow up in Barcelona next week, I hope. And maybe if we're lucky, we see a Tiger Mini X, who knows, and so on. But other than that, Anders, is there anything else on your end that you'd like to cover or finish off with today?
Just thanks very much for having me. Pleased to be here. Next one, maybe we should do live streamed from one of my studios using our streaming technology.
Yeah. I mean, we have this on camera now, so I'm going to hold you to it.
Recorded.
Awesome, buddy. Well, thanks. Thank you so much for today.
And, thanks, Pierre.
Good
Appreciate
luck.
It. Cheers.